Welcome to episode 11 of the Serious About Security podcast for Monday, July 9th, 2012, brought to you by the Greater Lafayette Security Professionals Group, Secure Purdue, and the Center for Education and Research in Information Assurance and Security, or SERIUS, at Purdue University. Let me introduce the host of today's podcast. I'm Preston Wiley, CISSP, CCNA.
This is Keith Watson, Research Engineer at SERIUS.
And I'm Mike Hill, CISSP. In announcements today, the next Greater Lafayette Security Professionals meeting for July 12th has been canceled. The August meeting will be a presentation by Pascal Mounier on August 9th on trusted digital repositories. Please make sure to bring your lunch.
In news today, we have two security announcements. Chrome actually got an update after 2 weeks of having no updates, or two podcasts of having no updates, actually, which is about 4 weeks. It got updated to version 20. 0.1132.43, which actually fixed 22 security issues. 14 of those issues were rated high, and 5 were rated medium. And Microsoft will be releasing updates tomorrow, July 10th, on the Patch Tuesday, and they'll have a total of 9 security updates. 3 of those updates are rated as critical, and the rest are important, and the critical updates all impact versions of the Windows operating systems from Windows XP up to Windows 7 and all of the server operating systems as well. And that is news for today, so we'll move to announcements and articles. And I have the first article, which is about the first iOS malware app being discovered in the Apple App Store. And this app is called Find and Call, and it was apparently some Russian company had this app. And basically what it did is it would get downloaded, and then it would basically spam all of your contacts with SMS messages saying that they should also download the app. So basically without the user's permission and all that. So that was considered malware by a lot of people. And the question is it malware, or was it the company described it as a bug in their software, and I honestly have a hard time believing that. Naked Security was questioning if it was actually malware, or was it because the company was arguably legitimate. They had a website. They had a useful features in their app and things like that. So the question is, was this actually malware, or was it just a kind of a poorly devised marketing scheme for their app? I just wanted to know what you guys thought about this.
Well, it seems to me that if you have an app that uploads your contact database to another service, right there, it tells me it's got some fishiness to it. And we've seen this in the past. In fact, we talked about it in previous episodes, where various applications would upload your contact database and then do stuff with that information, or perhaps just store it, you know, with the intention of using it later. And we kind of questioned whether that was legitimate practice. And I believe that in later versions of iOS, they had an option in the software that if an application wanted to upload your contact database, that you'd be prompted first and could refuse it if it wanted to do that. So I think this is another case of an app that's taking more information than it needs. And certainly if it's spamming everybody in your contact list, I would call that certainly spamware at least, and possibly malware at worst. And so what's surprising, I think, is the fact that it showed up as an approved app through the Apple App Store. And then the question becomes, since it showed up on the Russian side of it, of the Apple App Store, is the review team for Russian-based apps the same as what would be used to look at any other country's set of applications? you know, Apple's pretty quiet about how that whole review process works, so it's a little unclear how it might have snuck through on the Russian side where it didn't on others. So I'd be curious to see how that works. But given the amount of information Apple shares on that sort of thing, I don't think we'll hear too much about it.
Yeah, I agree with both of you. I really think an app that behaves in this manner, I think, meets the definition of malware. I don't believe that through some poor programming, it was able to take the contact information and spam folks. I think that was deliberate. I don't see how you would write that code any other way, how that could just be done accidentally. And really, Keith, you kind of touched on what I picked up out of the article and the fact that Apple was just last week celebrating the 5th birthday of the iPhone, and security experts were sort of congratulating Apple on the fact that no malware had entered the App Store up to that date. So obviously there's probably some things Apple wants to keep quiet as far as how the review process goes, but it'll be interesting to see how they respond to this, because I know they take the App Store very seriously. They want to keep malware out. So I wonder if for future developers, if things just got a little bit tougher, if they're going to be a little bit more rigorous on the review that they conduct on getting apps into the store. So, you know, that'll remain to be seen. I was pleased to see one of the initial articles I'd seen on this said that Apple had not removed the app from the store yet. So I was pleased to see that they did ultimately remove it. But it'll be interesting over the next months to see if anything else kind of sneaks in, or if the review process just got much more difficult for programmers.
Yeah, and I just wanted to point out that this app was seen in both the Apple App Store and the Android App Store, but the Android one isn't quite as newsworthy, because malware is found in the Android App Store more frequently than the Apple App Store. It was named the same thing, the find and call, in both the Apple App Store and on Google Play. So with that, we'll move on to the second article, and this one will be Keith's.
Right. So another mobile operating system story here, and this is related to the questions, not confirmed yet, but questions as to whether there is a botnet running on Android devices. And this comes from evidence of spam messages collected over the past few weeks, in which the message ID seemed to indicate that the spam was coming from what in the string says Android mobile. And now, certainly message IDs can be forged, so there's not a significantly new set of information here about that. But some other information has come that the IP addresses used from some of these messages seem to be coming from countries known for spamming as well. And so the question, and we know that malware has been found on Android devices before, and some of that malware has come from countries where it is likely that somebody downloaded a malicious Android app. Typically, those would be Android apps that that you would normally pay for, that are available through other means, let's say. And those apps are listed to, say, be Angry Birds, whatever, but may actually be spamming software or some other malicious software. And some people like to think that, they can just download an Android app from anywhere and they're okay. Even getting it from the Android marketplace doesn't exactly guarantee that you're going to have safe software as well. So really the point of the article is a big question. Is there an Android botnet? Which is very interesting. If you have mobile devices actually sending out spam messages, that's interesting. Certainly the idea of a tablet or a phone doing that is very interesting. But it's a big question. There's not a lot of significant evidence, partly because no one has the malware itself to do an analysis on it. We're kind of looking at the results of what could be malware-based Android software doing this. But we don't actually have that software yet that anybody has taken a look at. So there were several articles out about this, and I thought this was very interesting. It's not proven yet, but evidence is kind of leaning in that direction. So I thought this was a very interesting news item to talk about today.
Well, I find it interesting just that this hasn't happened yet, a botnet on Android phones. I think that it's been proven that it's definitely possible for this to happen, and by various researchers. And this is the first instance where it may have actually happened for malicious purposes. But the evidence is kind of circumstantial at the moment. And until somebody gets a copy of this malware and proves that it's there, there's just going to be this question mark over it of is this really an Android botnet or is it something else?
Yeah, and I think, with what we know right now, it's really hard to say for sure. Hopefully, we'll know more very soon as far as if this is actual botnet. And what I try to take away from some of the articles I looked at on this is what can end users do to kind of help avoid this? And it kind of comes back to what we've said on previous podcasts, make sure, you download your apps from the official marketplace. The chance, while we've stated that there is the potential for malware to exist there, it's much lower that you'll get this type of malware versus the unofficial markets that are out there. And I think that's part of what this was saying is based on the headers in these messages they're looking at, they're coming from other countries, and if you're accessing markets there and unofficial markets so that you can get your free version of a popular app that you don't want to pay for, these are some of the additional risks that you're taking. Since we don't know for sure where this originated from, I'm not saying that that would totally prevent it in this case, but it would be at least one step, one additional step someone could take. If it turns out that this originated from the official Google Android market, then they're going, if they find it, they're going to lock it down and remove it. If it's from one of the unofficial markets, it may persist there for forever.
It's interesting if you think about using an Android device or any mobile device for a member in a botnet. It has some interesting characteristics similar to what you would find with your home broadband connected PC, for example, which typically have been the sources or at least the major members of any botnet. But the comparisons are interesting because you have an always on network connection to the cellular network. The device is pretty much on all the time. I don't know too many people actually turn their phones off at night, for example, when they go to bed. Usually they leave them on and they leave them charging. And, one way you might detect this is your battery draining a little quicker than usual. And sadly, mine is doing that right now, although I think it's due to age more than anything else. But, for most users, they might say, well, wait a minute, I can't last on a single charge throughout the day. What's going on here? And they may take it to the store and get a new battery, for example. But how would you know if you had one? Other than running some antivirus software on the device itself and maybe checking the amount of data that your device is sending through whatever services provides that sort of information to your carrier or from software on the phone, it would be very difficult to actually know that was what was going on. I mean, you'd have some symptoms that might indicate a problem, but without actually, seeing this process, considering these things can, if you look on an Android phone, you see a lot of background processes that have nothing running in the front end that you would notice. So it'd be very interesting to see how that would work, but I see how that might be a very interesting target given the number of devices out there right now. And, home broadband use is kind of declining in a sense, whereas mobile is really picking up.
Yeah, I I agree with that, and I think that a cell phone, a mobile device, smartphone, whatever you want to call it, has a very similar characteristic to a PC, in that, and even more so, in that people leave their phones on pretty much all the time. While some people may shut down their PCs to save energy, or just because that's what they were taught to do, or whatever. While people pretty much always leave their cell phones on and running all the time. I mean, I use mine as an alarm clock in the morning to wake up, so I pretty much have to leave mine on in order to use it in that method. I think this is one of those things where if you stick with the market, then you're, as Mike said, you're a lot safer than if you try and sideload apps from alternate markets, or just download the app itself from somewhere and pull it into your phone. And I also think that you mentioned looking at the applications that are running. And you may not necessarily see it or think something's odd, but if you download Angry Birds and it's running in the background after you close it, then I think that may be an indication that something's not right. I mean, there's some apps that you shouldn't see in the background, but there are some that could. You could say, well, why is this in the background? And it may be doing something that in the background. But I think there are some things you can look at on your device, your Android device, and potentially see malware on your device. But again, it's not a 100% success rate on detecting malware. Well, okay, if that's all for that one, we'll move on to the third article, which would be Mike's.
Yes, well, we just celebrated the 4th of July holiday this past Wednesday, and I came across an article I thought would be timely for this podcast, and it was a result of the fireworks fiasco in San Diego. During their 4th of July event, they were set to have about a 17-minute show sending off the approximately 7,000 fireworks during that time from five locations. However, due to a glitch in the software, the fireworks all got sent off at once. So the 17-minute show was reduced to about 30 seconds. And an article came out after this happened where the event organizers, Garden State, one of the owners, co-owners, stated they were looking into what happened, and said that it appeared to be a virus in the code that synchronized the firing of all the shells at once. So I thought this was interesting. I thought it was interesting when it happened. I actually saw it on the news that night. It didn't occur to me at the time that it would they could be related to a computer virus. However, since the co-owner of Garden State came out and said that it appeared to be a virus, I thought this would be fair game for our podcast. So I wanted to kind of talk about this and see, Naked Security put out an article a day or two after this one came out saying, is this really a computer virus? So I thought this would make for a good discussion as far as what took place that caused all these fireworks to fire all at once. And according to the articles, they did pre-testing at the site to make sure that all the signals were set up appropriately so that these fireworks, so that the show could go on as planned. But when the test signal came just before the show was to start, they all got fired at once, and they said it was a result of a corrupted file being sent. And as I said, the co-owner of Garden State implied that this could be due to a computer virus. So I just wanted to kind of get your guys' thoughts on this. To me, as a programmer, kind of reading through the article, one of the first things that occurs to me is, it seems a little hard to believe it might have been a virus. But even so, I'm just wondering how this software was written, because it seems to me that one of the first things you could do in your software is kind of say, hey, if I'm ever told to fire everything at once, this is obviously a bad condition, and I should not, you know, the software should just sort of not respond or respond with an error saying that's an illegitimate firing sequence. There's no reason why I would fire this many at once, or whatever the threshold may be. You know, there were 7,000. I don't know how many would be fired at once, what a legitimate value for that would be. Let's say 100 or 200. But you could have that limiter in the software to say, if I'm ever asked to fire more than these at once, then an error has occurred. Something bad has taken place, and I should not execute that command. So I was just curious what you guys saw, if you thought this was truly a virus. And if so, or if not, what could have been taking place to kind of help prevent this, or, you know, help prevent this for future events, for things with fireworks shows, but other things that also rely on software?
I think it's more likely that instead of saying virus, he should have said bug. Because to me, this sounds like a bug in the software, not a virus in the software. And yeah, what's a virus on a fireworks computer most likely going to do? It's most likely going to be part of a botnet, for example. It's going to be sending spam messages. It might be corrupting files or deleting files or trying to spread itself around. But I don't think that would likely cause the firing sequence to change. I mean, that's software that not everybody has on their computer. So I think it's highly unlikely that it's a virus. I hear bug when I hear the story. I can also hear operator error as another potential problem. But I don't, when I look at my top 10 list of issues that might have caused this fireworks show to be very short, virus is not on that list. That's just me.
Okay, well, I don't think we'll ever really know what happened. I think this was a timely July 4th article, and we'll probably not hear that. This is probably the end of what we're going to hear from it. So we're probably not going to know unless we talk to the people themselves. And I'm not even sure if they'll be able to figure out what happened. I don't know what kind of software they're using. I don't know if they're using software specifically designed to fire off fireworks, or if they're just using programmable controllers or whatever they're using to do this sort of thing. But, you know, it's hard to say what happened. I mean, it could have been a bug. It could have been somebody misprogrammed these things. I've heard it suggested that maybe they accidentally ran the test program and left some stuff in the queue, and then when they went to send the commands, it basically sent them all at once. So it could have been just a human error. It could have been a software error. It could have been the computer that they were using. Maybe it was a Windows computer, was infected with some sort of malware or something like that, and it was. You know, maybe it was eating up all the CPU, and it that caused another glitch in the software or something like that. But I don't think we're ever going to know for certain exactly what happened, because I think this is just one of those incidences that's interesting to people, because it, you know, it happened on July 4th. It affected, you know, I guess 500,000 people showed up to see this fireworks show. So I'm not sure if we're going to find out exactly what happened, but it is interesting.
Maybe this is part of our fast-paced lifestyle, and as we get faster and faster and technology improves, we are now going to see shorter fireworks show, but we're going to see bigger ones. Perhaps that's what this is.
Well, that could be. One thing I also noted from the article was the use of the terminology computer virus. The Naked Security article went so far as to suggest that this might be a sly way of kind of shifting some of the responsibility as well. And I don't know, I tend to see that more in our culture than before with computers. It seems like it's easy to say, well, you know, the computer did it. You know, that's something the computer did. Not, there wasn't an error on our part. A virus caused it. You know, we had this event happen, and it was out of our control. It's not due to no fault of our own. I don't know. Maybe that truly is the case, but you know, I think for what we know right now, it's more likely to call it a bug. You know, and if they want to back up saying it's a virus, I think they should have some evidence of that to say it's a virus. But it seems like they can pass the buck a little easier if they say, well, my computer was compromised, versus saying, you know what, you know, as Preston mentioned, there's been one theory that the queue wasn't cleared, which would clearly just be an operator error. And that's very, you know, that's very plausible. And, you know, everyone's human, people make mistakes, but that doesn't, you know, that kind of puts the heat right on them versus saying, well, we had this virus out there, that, you know, the computer malfunctioned, we had this virus, and that's what caused things to kind of go haywire and blow up on us. You know, we did all our work up front, so clearly it was something outside of our control. So I think it's interesting, and it may not have been malicious in their terminology. It may even have been just not using the terminology virus in the appropriate form. But I just find it interesting because it kind of just shifts the blame a little bit and says, you know, hey, you know, we're reliable, we're dependable, and this event happened outside of our control, and we're going to work really hard to make sure that doesn't happen again. Versus saying, you know what, a mistake occurred, and we're going to work hard to make sure that mistake doesn't occur again.
Well, I think you see a few instances of shifting the blame in the article. So, I mean, you know, the San Diego, they shifted the blame up to the fireworks company, and the fireworks company tries to shift the blame up to the virus or the software vendor. So, but in the end, the Garden State is going to, they said they're going to put on another fireworks show at some point at no cost. So, I think they're trying to make up for it as best they can, and I really don't think that they will be able to figure out exactly what happened, because I highly doubt that this software that they use was designed with security in mind and proper logging and things like that to figure out exactly what happened in this incident.
Well, the other interesting thing was it says 3,500 people paid $15 to stand on the U.S. Midway deck and watch the show from there. And they only got 15 seconds of a pretty big bang show, but only 10 people of 3,500 actually asked for a refund. I found that to be hilarious.
Well, maybe this will become, maybe like you said, we're moving towards a more efficient show in the future. Maybe maybe some people like that. I mean, the one thing I'll mention is on the Naked Security article that we'll provide a link to. They posted a video from YouTube, and you can hear folks on the YouTube video, and they really seem to enjoy it for the 15 to 30 seconds that it lasted. They said it was just amazing seeing everything go off like it was. So, you know, there was some value in it, I imagine. I can't imagine being there. I mean, the booms on the YouTube video alone are pretty loud. So to be there in person, it had to be something else to see that. But so, yeah, maybe the other most of those 3,500 people felt that they got their money's worth.
Okay, and with that, we'll wrap up the podcast for today. I wanted to thank the hosts, Keith Watson and Mike Hill, as well as Sirius and Secure Purdue. I'm Preston Wiley. Have a safe and secure day.